All right, this evening we're in Genesis chapter 49. Lord willing, we will get through the whole chapter tonight. And so this is Jacob's prophecies concerning his sons and their progeny. So we'll pick up in Genesis chapter 49, verse 1. Then Jacob summoned his sons and said, "Assemble yourselves that I may tell you what shall befall you in the days to come." And verse 2 begins here, the prophecy. "Gather together and hear, O sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel, your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence, because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly. Because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob, and scatter them in Israel. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. He ties his foal to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine, and his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are dull from wine, and his teeth white from milk. Zebulun shall dwell at the seashore, and he shall be a haven for ships, and his flank shall be towards Sidon. Issachar is a strong donkey, lying down between the sheepfolds. When he saw that a resting place was good and that the land was pleasant, he bowed his shoulder to bear burdens and became a slave at forced labor. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backward. For thy salvation I wait, O Lord. As for Gad, raiders shall raid him, but he shall raid at their heels. As for Asher, his food shall be rich, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a doe let loose. He gives beautiful words. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a spring. Its branches run over a wall. The archers bitterly attacked him and shot at him and harassed him, but his bow remained firm, and his arms were agile. From the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, from there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. From the God of your father who helps you, and by the Almighty who blesses you, with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. The blessings of your father have surpassed the blessings of my ancestors, up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. May they be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of the one distinguished among his brothers. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours the prey, and in the evening he divides the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them. He blessed them, everyone with a blessing appropriate to him." So let's stop there, and then we'll pick up in 29 in a bit. So, lots here. We will certainly not exhaust all of these this evening. But let's just walk through here. So Jacob is about to die, literally about to die here. And so he calls his 12 sons to him and pronounces these prophecies more properly. So let's talk briefly about the oracle, right? These are oracles that are being pronounced. So there are two types of oracles. There's a good oracle and there's a bad oracle. So the bad oracle we're pretty familiar with as we read the New Testament. The bad oracle is called an oracle of woe, W-O-E, right? So we see Jesus in the New Testament. We see the prophets of the Old Testament pronouncing woe, right? Jesus says, "Woe to you, Chorazin. Woe to you, Bethsaida," right? So this is one category of oracle. It's in the category of cursing, all right? It's a bad oracle. There's also the oracle of the wheel, W-E-A-L, right? And these are in the category of blessings. So when Jacob says something good about one of his sons and his son's progeny or descendants, we would call that an oracle of weal. When Jacob says something negative about one of his sons and his son's descendants, we would call that an oracle of woe. All right, and we'll see both of those in here. Verse 3. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength. Preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power, uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. So here, and by the way, in terms of the order, it is not completely in the order in which the sons were born. It's pretty close to that. There are a couple of them that are out of order. But he begins here with his firstborn son, Reuben. And as we've talked about, beginning back even in Genesis chapter 35, Reuben clearly fell out of favor with Jacob because Reuben slept with one of Jacob's concubines. And you can go see that in Genesis 35, verse 22. So he's clearly acknowledged as the firstborn, the beginning of Jacob's strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. And then in verse 4, he says, you shall not have preeminence. And actually, we've already seen this. You know, it seems as though in the episode where the brothers were trying to sell Joseph off or even kill Joseph, that they make the decision while Reuben is not even there. He actually comes back and discovers the cistern is empty. And so Reuben has lost his preeminence, even among his brothers, it seems. Verse 4 says, uncontrolled as water. This is literally either boiling over or reckless. That's what that means there. And so we see that although Reuben is clearly in the covenant, although Reuben clearly gets an inheritance in the land of Canaan, Reuben's sin is remembered by Jacob, and he, for the most part, gets an oracle of woe. How is this fulfilled? We see that as we read the rest of the Old Testament, that no judge, no prophet, and no prince ever comes from the tribe of Reuben. The Dathan and Abiram, as we go through Exodus, we will see they rebelled against Moses and paid the penalty for that. They were actually descendants of Reuben. As we get into Joshua, and we see that the land is being apportioned out, it turns out that Reuben's portion of the land is actually east of the Jordan, outside of Canaan. Let's see. As I mentioned, he had already lost the respect of his brothers, and it had been 40 years, by the way, since that episode with Jacob's concubine, and Jacob remembers it, and it certainly influences the oracle that Jacob pronounces on Reuben. We pick up in verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brothers, and I won't read it again, but we do remember the episode back in Genesis chapter 34. Their sister Dinah was raped, if you remember, by Shechem. And Simeon and Levi are the two who take it upon themselves to barter with the men of Shechem. And it turns out they convinced them to be circumcised, all the men of the town. And then when they were hurting, Simeon and Levi went in and obliterated the town completely. And it's a very sad story. Pastor Wayne preached on that, and then we talked about it here. So I won't go too much into it. It turns out Simeon was the smallest tribe in Israel. If you go to Numbers 26 and see the census there. Simeon is actually, interestingly, omitted from the blessings of Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 33. It's a very, very interesting omission there in Deuteronomy 33. And there's also an episode in Numbers 25 that is relevant to both Simeon and Levi. So what is happening in Numbers 25 is that some of the Israelites are intermingling with the Canaanite women, and they're sleeping with them and taking them as wives. It turns out that Zimri is the Israelite who was having relations with a Canaanite woman. Phinehas is a Levite, right? And if you remember the episode or you want to go there after the fact, Numbers chapter 25, Zimri actually parades his Canaanite woman in front of Moses and in front of Phinehas, in front of the leadership of Israel, and goes right into the tent, and they proceed to, you know, do what men and women do. And Phinehas is really upset about that. And so Phinehas, a Levite, goes into the tent, he takes a spear, and he thrusts it through Zimri and the Canaanite woman. Okay? For that, Phinehas, a Levite, is blessed, and all of the Levites are blessed in Phinehas and are redeemed to be the priests of God under the old covenant. Zimri, Simeonite. Okay? And so when it says down in verse 7, cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob. That word disperse literally means divide. Some commentators believe that that division happens in Numbers 25, where Simeon is now the recipient of the woe, but Phinehas redeems Levi and is now become a recipient of the oracle of weal, or of blessing. Okay? And so Simeon and Levi, who are connected, then become divided later in Numbers chapter 25. It turns out that both Simeon and Levi don't really get much of an inheritance in the land of Canaan. Simeon, his land and the land of his descendants is sort of bound up in the land of Judah. They don't have a really clear division of the land given to them. And then, of course, the Levites, if you read on through the Old Testament, they do not get a land for inheritance as well, because God is their inheritance. Their blessing is to be the old covenant priests. And then I would just note here that Moses himself was from the tribe of Levi. I'm going to skip over 8 through 12 for now. We'll come back to Judah at the end. Verse 13, Zebulun shall dwell at the seashore, and he shall be a haven for ships, and his flank shall be towards Sidon. Zebulun, that tribe gets an inheritance in the land of northern Canaan. It kind of connects the Sea of Galilee with the Mediterranean Sea right near the town of Sidon. And so not actually much is said about Zebulun, to be honest with you. But anyway, the land that they ultimately get in the inheritance of Canaan is predicted here by Jacob. And of course, these are oracles. These are prophecies, right? Because if you remember, the way the land in Canaan is apportioned, it's apportioned by lot. Not because Joshua is going back and reading Genesis 49 and making sure that Jacob's words come true, right? Moses is writing this prophecy down before the land of Canaan is apportioned by lot in the time of Joshua, okay? So, let's see. In verses 14 and 15, there's Issachar. He's a strong donkey lying down between the sheepfolds. Literally there in verse 14, it says saddlebags. When he saw that a resting place was good, verse 15, and that the land was pleasant, he bowed his shoulder to bear burdens and became a slave at forced labor. So, it turns out that Issachar did, in fact, become a very hardworking tribe among the tribe of the Israelites. And actually, if you go and look in 1 Chronicles chapter 7, the Issacharites are called mighty men of valor a couple of different times. So very strong and very hardworking. The tribe of Dan, verses 16 and 17. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backwards. In verse 16, Dan shall judge. That word judge actually comes from the name Dan. That's what Dan means. And in fact, Dan, although it was allotted a portion in Canaan, never actually took over its allotment. It ended up being a tribe full of wanderers. You can see in Judges 17 and 18, they fall into idolatry. There's a very famous story there of a priest named Micah and the Danites who come along. A very famous sermon called 10 Shekels in a Shirt that comes out of that story that I would commend to you. And also very interesting about Dan is that that tribe is omitted in the list of the tribes in Revelation chapter 7. All right, very interesting there. Also, I would note here that Samson, the judge Samson of the Samson and Delilah fame, comes from the tribe of Dan. In verse 18, there's kind of an interlude between the oracles. It looks like a prayer that Jacob cries out to God. There's no commentary on this here in Genesis chapter 49. It may be that Jacob simply chooses to take an interlude at this point. It may be that he's tired. There could be any number of reasons why. And so we would just merely speculate at that. But anyway, it seems like there's a brief interlude here in verse 18. We proceed to verse 19 and the oracle concerning Gad. Raiders shall raid him, but he shall raid at their heels. Turns out Gad was also a tribe of very valiant fighters. You can see that, 1 Chronicles 12 and some other places in the Old Testament. And Gad, if you remember as you were reading through the Old Testament, they are also on the east side of Jordan. And so it is probably, this is an oracle or a prophecy about the fact that as people were trying to move into the land of Canaan, these raiders, Gad was actually one of the first lines of defense against these raiders that were coming into the land of Canaan. And so we see that historically. Verse 20, as for Asher, his food shall be rich and he shall yield royal dainties. Asher in the land of Canaan, they got a very agriculturally rich strip of land that was very near the Mediterranean Sea in northern Israel. And so that just happened to be a land that was very good agriculturally speaking. And so Jacob gives an oracle of wheat here for Asher. Verse 21, Naphtali is a doe let loose. He gives beautiful words. So Naphtali, actually, as you read through the Old Testament, specifically you can look in Judges 4, they were a tribe that was very useful in battle because they were very quick. They were among the first to respond, right? And so we see that here, a doe let loose. And then in terms of giving beautiful words, if you go to Judges chapter 5, the song of Deborah and Barak, right, comes from the tribe of Naphtali. Right? Deborah is from that particular tribe, and so they have this tendency towards poetry and towards music, to songs. Then we get to Joseph, and Joseph has at least as long a blessing as Judah. And I'm not going to go through it and read the whole thing here, beginning in verse 22. But you can see there's incredibly flowery language here as Jacob prophesies over his son Joseph. Remember, we saw in Genesis chapter 48 that Joseph had already brought his two sons born in Egypt, Manasseh and Ephraim, to Jacob to be blessed. But now Jacob is blessing Joseph again. We see in verse 23, the archers bitterly attacked him and shot at him and harassed him. So who are these archers? These archers are Joseph's enemies. Among Joseph's enemies are Joseph's brothers. Okay? Potiphar's wife, for example. All right? And so this is a bit of a historical biographical sketch that Jacob is giving. He's looking back over Joseph's life. He's seeing that Joseph has many enemies. Verse 24, but Joseph's bow remained firm, and his arms were agile. From the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, from there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel, from the God of your father who helps you, and by the Almighty who blesses you. Four consecutive clauses with an appeal to God. Right? And we've already seen this in Joseph's life. Joseph himself appealing to God on multiple occasions. And when we come back next week to get into Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, we will see again that Joseph attributes everything that has happened in his life to God and his sovereignty and his blessing, even the bad things. right? And so Jacob sees God working in Joseph's life, and four times in a row here in this oracle of wheel, Jacob pronounces the presence of God and his sovereignty as the source of the blessings on Joseph's life. You can see that halfway through verse 25 with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of your father have surpassed the blessings of my ancestors, right? And so Jacob sees now that the blessings that have been bestowed upon him because Joseph is the vice president of Egypt and has preserved his entire family, 70 plus people coming down from Canaan. He sees those blessings as even greater than the blessings that have been bestowed on Abraham and Isaac, right? And so there's all this flowery language in this oracle of wheel. And he says, may they be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of the one distinguished among his brothers. Okay, so let's see what else I have here. Archers. And remember last time we talked about how Joseph, through his sons Ephraim and Manasseh, will get a double portion of the inheritance. And you can see that as they apportion the land in the book of Joshua as well. There's Manasseh on the east side. There's a half tribe of Manasseh on the east of the Jordan, the other half of Manasseh on the west of the Jordan. And then Ephraim, we talked about last time, got a very significant allotment in the land of Israel, such that it was so significant that the name, the nation Israel, was synonymous with the name Ephraim as you read through some of the Old Testament prophets. Okay, so very, very prominent places in the land of Canaan once they move in there. I note here that Samuel and Joshua were from Ephraim and Gideon was from Manasseh. So you see prophets and judges coming from the loins of Joseph. Finally, we have Benjamin. Verse 27, he is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours the prey, and in the evening he divides the spoil. Benjamin was a very warlike tribe, often out of control, frankly, in the land of Canaan, but very talented in war. And I would just note here that the two Sauls, the two most famous Sauls in the Bible, are both from the tribe of Benjamin. King Saul, who was the first king of Israel, who was succeeded by David, and also Saul, who became the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, also from the tribe of Benjamin. So, let's go back to Judah. We'll spend some time here. These are very, very important prophecies, oracles in verse 8 and following. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp or young. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches, he lies down, or he bows down. He lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. He ties his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are dull from wine and his teeth white from milk. So here's what we see. We see in 8, 9, and 10, we see that Judah has now, the fourthborn, has now risen to the highest level of prominence in the eyes of Jacob. Reuben, because of his sin, he has given away his birthright. Simeon and Levi, because of their sins against Shechem in Genesis chapter 34, given away their birthrights. And now Judah, the fourthborn, has become preeminent, right? And this is an incredible prophecy. You see, your brothers, verse 8, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Right? So we had seen previously that Joseph had these dreams, right? That his brothers would bow down to him. And that was true very much in a worldly sense. That those dreams came to fruition as Joseph rises to prominence in Egypt, right? But ultimate authority is not given to Joseph or his descendants. Ultimate authority over Israel is given to Judah. Okay? And we had made some mention of this previously as we saw Judah rising to prominence, right? Back at the end of Genesis chapter 47, I believe. Is it 47? Nope, not 47. 44, Genesis 44, I was thinking of 44. Judah, you know, is willing to take the place of his brother, right? He's the one whose word his father Israel can trust. And so these are very important places of prominence that Judah is rising to here, right? It says in verse 9, Judah is a lion's whelp or young from the prey. My son, he couches down as a lion, right? And in Revelation chapter 5, verse 5, right, is spoken of the lion of the tribe of Judah, obviously referring to Jesus Christ. That's correct. Who himself is in the physical lineage of Judah. All right? And that's prominent here also in verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. So in the short term, in the nation of Israel, right, David is the kingly figure, right? Saul of the tribe of Benjamin, he turns out to be an utter failure as a king of Israel. He's replaced by David, who is also in the line of Judah. David is the king preeminent in Israel. He's the great psalmist, right? He's the one who was a man after God's own heart. Right? And he, most importantly, is the one to whom is given what we call the Davidic covenant, which you can read about in 2 Samuel chapter 7, that there will never cease to be a descendant of David on the throne of Israel. Okay? And that covenant is fulfilled in the short term in Solomon and in David's further descendants. And then that covenant is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ, who is prophet, priest, and king, the lion of the tribe of Judah. And then in verse 10, near the end, there's this until Shiloh comes. And Pastor Mike preached on this, right? But this word Shiloh is very interesting here. So it occurs a few dozen times in the Old Testament. And every time but one, it refers to a place in the land of Canaan where the tabernacle was set up. This is the only time that this word Shiloh is used in the Old Testament that it does not specifically refer to a place. And so it's very unique in that regard. All right, very unique. And it's in many ways cryptic. And the only reason we understand what it means is because in the Jewish writings, the Jewish ancient writings, the Jews themselves, even prior to Christ, saw Genesis 49 verse 10 and the mentioning of Shiloh here as a reference to Messiah, the Messiah King. For example, if you go back and you study some of the Dead Sea Scrolls discovered in Qumran, which predate the birth of Jesus Christ, they actually translate Genesis 49:10 as Messiah. Right? They put the word Messiah, King, in there. Right? And so we associate this prophecy, as Pastor Mike preached as well, with Jesus, because the Jews themselves understood that this was a messianic prophecy. Okay? Very significant. And then when you see the life and ministry of Jesus Christ and the New Testament writings, it is undoubtedly a reference to Jesus, the Lion of the tribe of Judah. And it just doesn't stop there. Right? It says, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Right? This is Psalm chapter 2. This is the later portions of the book of Revelation. This is 1 Corinthians, where he has put everything under his feet and then presented all of these things to his Father. Verse 11, he tied his foal to the vine, his donkey's colt to the choice vine. This is a prophecy of prosperity. He washes his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. What is that? Go read Revelation chapter 19, verse 13, and tell me that that is not almost a direct quotation. And his eyes, in verse 12 in the New American Standard, it says his eyes are dull from wine. Literally, though, it's darker than wine. His eyes are darker than wine. Right? He's the coming conqueror. He's got blood in his eyes. Go read Revelation 19. And his teeth are white from milk. Right? This is a sign of his glory. And the color of his robes, right? They are dipped in blood. But make no mistake, they are white. They are white. Right? So this is an incredible messianic prophecy fulfilled in the life and ministry and rule, eternal rule, of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Did you want to add anything here, Pastor Mike? And again, that's not exhaustive, right? It's just giving you a sense. After all of this, after all of the oracles, verse 29, then he, Jacob, charged them and said to them, I'm about to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephron the Hittite for a burial site. There they buried Abraham and his wife Sarah. There they buried Isaac and his wife Rebekah. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is in it, purchased from the sons of Heth. So, we're not going to go back and look at all these, but you can go back, for example, to Genesis chapter 23. That is the account of Abraham purchasing the cave where Sarah was buried. And then Abraham was buried there, I think in Genesis perhaps 25, verse 9. Isaac was buried there, Genesis 35. Jacob buried Leah. If you remember, Leah was not, she was the younger of Laban's daughters. And so she was not actually the preferred wife of Jacob. Rachel was the preferred wife of Jacob, but Rachel died on the way back into Canaan, if you remember, after giving birth to Benjamin. And Rachel was buried outside of Canaan on the way in. And so Leah lived, obviously, past that as Jacob was living in the land of Canaan. And when Leah died, Jacob buried her there. And so it's interesting that he requests to go and to be buried in the land of Canaan next to Leah, who was actually not his favorite wife. But he wants to be buried with his fathers. That's very important to him. He wants to be buried in the land of Canaan. He wants to be associated with Abraham and Isaac, right? The recipients of the covenant, which passed on the covenant to him, right? Very interesting. If you remember, Abraham was given the covenant in Genesis chapter 15, right, where the flaming torch passes through the animals. He was given the covenant of circumcision in Genesis chapter 17. Even before all of that, he was given the great promises in Genesis chapter 12. Those promises passed from Abraham, not to Ishmael, the firstborn, but to Isaac. Isaac was the son of promise. He was the one who received the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant. And then Isaac passes those blessings on to Jacob, although in a much more nefarious way, right? Jacob steals the birthright and the blessing from Isaac. Jacob, did I say that? Jacob steals, right, from Esau the blessing, right? And so these covenants have come down. We know these covenants have come down because God has spoken to Abraham. He has spoken to Isaac. He has spoken to Jacob. He has given them all of the same words, all of the same language, all of the same promises. And now Jacob wants to be buried in Canaan, which will ultimately be the fulfillment of the promises made to Abraham. If you remember, if you go back all the way to Genesis 12, the aspects of the promises made to Abraham: land, nation, name, blessing. The first one is land. Canaan will be their inheritance, and that's where Jacob wants to go. He does not want to be buried in Egypt. And we will see in the next chapter that his brothers make good on this pledge. Verse 33, when Jacob finished charging his sons, he drew his feet into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. And he was 147 years old at the time. He had been through much. Much of it was his own fault. But he had been through much, not the least of which is having thought that his favorite son had been torn apart by wild beasts, but was able to spend the last 17 years of his life in the presence of Joseph and being cared for by Joseph and the rest of his sons in the land of Goshen. Pastor Scott, did you want to say anything? So next time we'll pick up Genesis 50. I know you can't believe it, but Genesis 50... We are going to get to the death of Israel, and then after Genesis 50, the death of Joseph, then we'll take some time. I do want to spend some time talking about Joseph as a type of Christ, and then, like I said, we'll wait about 400 years, and we'll pick up in Exodus 1.
Great.